All right, Chuck, meeting is recording. I have 7:03, so.
Okay. Good evening. I'd like to call the November 4th, 2020 Lower Frederick Township Board of Supervisors General Meeting to order. Time is 7:04. Mark, do you want to make your announcements? I'll take care of the letting people in. Make your announcements regarding the meeting.
Welcome to the Lower Frederick Board of Supervisors meeting. If you would like to make any comments, please use the raise your hand feature in the participants. You're also welcome to call me on the township line or send me an email at manager@lowerfrederick.org. So we'll do everything we can to make all comments heard, and we'll do the best we can to let you make your own comments by unmuting you. In the Zoom platform.
Great. You want to announce the executive session while we're
Yeah,
at
we
it?
held an executive session on October 29th for legal discussions.
Great. Okay, I guess that takes us to the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance
Allegiance
to the flag
of
of
the
the
United
United States of
States of
America,
America
and to the
and
Republic
to
for
the
which
Republic
it
for which it
stands,
stands,
one
one
nation,
nation
under
under
God,
God,
indivisible,
indivisible,
with
with
liberty
liberty and
and
justice
justice
for
for
all.
all. We're getting better every month or every meeting. Roll call. Let the roll call reflect that all board members are present, as well as all staff. Our listed staff are present tonight's meeting. Announcements. Tonight's meeting is recorded for the purposes of preparing the minutes, and the recording is destroyed 6 months after the minutes are approved. This meeting is being recorded by the teleconference provider, which is Zoom. For the public, for members of the public who wish to speak before the board, please state your name, address, and subject matter prior to making your comments, and that way we can make sure that they are accurately reflected in our minutes. Thank you.
Oh, Chuck, I just wanted to add one thing. We also have a second solicitor here, Mr. Colby Grimm, who's going to, I think Peter has to leave early, so just want to recognize him for the record.
Okay. So just so the public knows, our solicitor is going to, we're going to move his report up in tonight's agenda so he can make his report prior to having to leave the meeting. But another solicitor from the same firm will still be with us after that point. Mark, that leads us to our, I guess it's update. We're
So
zooming the road.
why don't we go with the solicitor?
Okay, let's do that first then. And then we'll loop back. Peter, that would be you.
Hold on a second. I think I forgot to.
Co-host him.
All right, Peter, you should be able to unmute. Like we're having some technical difficulties.
Right. Okay,
Hello?
there he goes.
Yep, there he is.
Hey,
There you are.
I'm driving. I'm driving, so it's a little difficult for me to unmute. So I had to pull over. Sorry.
No
Not a
problem.
problem.
Happy you did it.
Yep. So under the solicitor report, I think the first item that the board would like discussed is the telecommunications ordinance. At the request of the board, I drafted an ordinance that would amend our zoning ordinance, to basically bring it up to date concerning technological changes with the delivery of telecommunication services, you know, most appropriately, you know, those services with cell or mobile phones. Since the last time the zoning ordinance had been changed to address these things, there's been a whole host of changes. There's been a whole host of new laws enacted by both the state and federal governments, and new regulations adopted by the FCC. So our ordinance needs to be updated to come into compliance with these new laws, and to make our regulations applicable to a lot of these new technologies, such as DAS or small wireless facilities, which are really kind of what you're going to see in the future, especially with the rollout of 5G across the country. I believe Mark has provided you with a copy of this. And, I can address any questions you have now, or if you want, I can just give kind of a quick summary of what's going on with the ordinance.
What would the board prefer, a quick summary at this point?
Great. That would be my preference. This is Dan Orff.
Marla, is that all right?
Yep. I have a couple questions. I'll wait till after the summary.
Okay, Peter.
Okay. To summarize the changes, the current zoning ordinance kind of regulates not only telecommunications, cell phones, cell towers, but in that same section is also regulating satellite TV and just normal TV antennas and ham radio type antennas. So the proposed ordinance kind of has to unpack all that, take out the cell mobile phone telecommunications type of regulations and the regulations that affect those sorts of facilities, leave in place the current regulations for satellite, TV satellite antennas, radio antennas, that sort of thing. And then we add a whole new section that just deals with telecommunications. And this whole new section, it kind of breaks up the regulations into four large areas, kind of based on the location and type of telecommunication facilities being proposed. So there's two types. One type is called a tower facility, which is the classic cell phone tower, the big monopole or the big lattice work type of pole. But also it covers smaller towers, such as, a tall telephone pole that has a single antenna on the top of it. And then the other type of facility is called a non-tower facility. And these are more of the more kind of modern facilities where they're putting on antenna on buildings, on other non-tower type of structures. And actually going back to towers also include, antennas being placed on silos and that sort of thing. And then as far as location goes, there's a division between facilities that are placed within the right-of-way and facilities that are not in the right-of-way. So the ordinance has a set of general regulations that applies to all facilities, and then has special regulations that applies to towers in the right-of-way, another set for towers not in the right-of-way, another set for non-tower facilities in the right-of-way, and then a fourth set for non-tower facilities outside of the right-of-way. And that language and those regulations are actually, I want to say, I think I first wrote ordinances to that effect 5 to 7 years ago, perhaps. And those regulations were brought into effect not only to kind of, we started seeing at that point in time more and more of smaller facilities, non-tower facilities located not on your classic monopole. And so we had regulations to deal with that. But also because, you know, the state had passed a new law that townships need to comply with, and there were new FCC regulations. And the law and regulations really had to deal with what sort of approvals we could force upon the providers of these facilities, what kind of fees we could require from them, and how quickly did we have to review and approve these applications. And then more recently, you know, last year, the FCC came out with a new set of regulations that specifically dealt with a specific type of facility that's called a small wireless facility. And those facilities are really what's going to be rolled out for 5G. And so the FCC, you know, imposed these new regulations once again with requirements on, you know, deadlines, on fees, on costs that the township would have to comply with. So there is a final section in the ordinance that deals with these small wireless facilities. And, you know, that basically follows the regulations set forth in the UCC regulation, or sorry, FCC regulation. And I think also I sent to the board was a memo from a telecommunications attorney from Pittsburgh area that I've been dealing with probably for the last 10 years. And he's done a lot of work with a lot of townships and coalitions of townships in both in Bucks and Montgomery County. The ordinance, the original ordinance that came out about 5-7 years ago was actually originally written by him that he then provided to, you know, many of our clients that had hired him. And we've then, you know, subsequently have modified. And the small wireless facility section of the proposed ordinance follows a memo he sent out at the end of 2019 regarding the FCC, new FCC regulations. So that's the quick summary of the ordinance. And if you guys have questions, I'll try to answer them the best I can.
Yeah. Hi, Peter. I have two very general questions. I think we're going to take up this in detail at a later time. So it sounds like you're modifying our existing ordinance and adding to it rather than replacing it with something completely new. Is that correct?
No. Well, as far as telecommunications go, no. I am, as far as telecommunications go, I am completely replacing it.
Okay.
The only thing that is remaining is, like I said, our current ordinance kind of mixed in with telecommunications regulations regarding, you know, satellite TV, satellites, ham radios, that, you know, TV antennas. Those are all staying. I've pulled those all out, and they're staying basically as written. But the current telecommunications regulations, I have removed and will be fully replacing.
Right. And then my second question was, I know a key part of the for townships is the design manual. So my question is, should the design manual be separate from the ordinance and referred to? And I'm just asking this as a legal question, because I'm thinking of what we did with our landscaping ordinance. If we keep the design manual separate, can the design manual then be updated without having to update the ordinance?
Yes. Generally, you can update the design manual separately from the ordinance. In putting together this draft ordinance, I was working off an ordinance that I had written for another township, and we just kept the design, all the design issues. We didn't make a separate design manual. We just kept them all into together. But if you guys, if the board decides they want a separate design manual, if you want, kind of more requirements in your design manual than is currently written, we can certainly pull them out. I have numerous samples of design manuals from other municipalities across the country. You know, I've got ones as, you know, as far away as Seattle and as big as Seattle. And, you know, certainly I could provide those to the board if they want to look at other, what other municipalities are doing and municipalities that, you know, have a lot of money and spend a lot of time looking at this sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, Peter, I guess really my question goes to whatever we put in the design manual. I think there's some really good standards out there. My question was, would it be better for us to have it separate? So if at some point in the future we wanted to make modifications, we wouldn't have to redo the ordinance. That's really what my question's about.
Yes. If you think it's something that you think you'll be tweaking numerous times over the years or months, yeah, it'd probably be better to keep it separate. If it's something that is more one and done, I just put it in the ordinance. But yeah, if you guys do think you're going to be maybe modifying it or tweaking it over time, it would be better to be outside.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, this is Chuck Geiser. I kind of agree with the approach having a separate manual from working with ordinances. If it reads better and easier to interpret the statutory stuff as opposed to getting into the design manual, I think it keeps it a little cleaner. But that's just, you know, my personal feeling in having to work with some of these similar things in the past.
Okay.
And as Marla said, if we want to change something and we want to just focus on the design manual, we don't have to worry about the other portion of it. Then I
right.
think that might make life easier for everybody.
Yeah.
It certainly makes it quicker and cheaper because you don't have to go through all the public notice and advertisements in the newspaper and that sort of issue.
So, Peter, I have a quick question for you. This is Noelle.
Yeah.
Would it be safe to assume that these, because I've read a lot of stuff on the 5G and the Cohen memo, would it be safe to assume that the design standards, which I agree we should keep it separate from the ordinance, is it safe to assume that the design standards is probably the only place that the township has a lot of say, more so than the other portions that apply?
Yeah, we certainly have more flexibility in the design and aesthetic aspects of it. You know, so long as those design elements and aesthetic elements don't bleed into the usefulness of the antennas, or the ability of the carriers to erect the antennas in locations where they want.
Okay. Are there any other questions for Peter on the ordinance that he has put in front of us? Hearing none. Like Marla said, I'm sure we will discuss this in much greater detail at a follow-up meeting.
Good.
Peter, is there anything else in your report?
The only other thing, just once again, just to make everyone aware, you know, we'd like to announce that we moved the Prestige conditional use hearing to Thursday, November 19th at 7:00. We had some issues, making sure that the public was properly noticed of this hearing. And so out of an abundance of caution, we moved it to that date and time. So we could make sure all the public notices were appropriately taken care of.
And Peter,
other than that, I'm done.
Peter, can you just reiterate Mr. Bird's status in all of this?
Yes. Once again, as I stated before, Mr. Bird, since he is a neighboring landowner, has decided that he will not participate as a member of the board in this hearing. He will not be sitting with the board. He will not be discussing this matter as a board member and will not be voting on this conditional use hearing as a board member.
Great. Thank you.
Hey, Peter and Chuck, can Peter just give a broad brush overview for the community as to the participation in this hearing is different from the standpoint of our townspeople than a regular meeting. So I was hoping that Peter could just give a quick overview of that for people as far as they're providing input and so forth if they want to.
Okay. Chuck, if you're fine with it, I can do that.
That's fine. Go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you know, this is on the 19th. This is going to be, it's a public meeting, but it is a hearing where the board is going to be sitting in a quasi-judicial capacity, and it's going to be run, you know, sort of like a trial. So the applicant is going to be before us and will be putting on, you know, their case. We will have a court reporter who will be taking everything down and making an official record. There will be evidence documents that will be submitted to the board and put in the record. The board, like I said, will be sitting basically as four judges on the hearing. The public will be able to participate in, you know, three separate ways. They can, you know, participate as in a normal hearing where they just sit and listen and just listen to everything presented and don't actively participate in any other way. They can, if they want, at the end of the hearing, there will be public comment. They will be, you know, sworn in, and they will then have a period of time at which point they can provide their views and opinions on the application. And then lastly, the most active form of participation is they can become a party. And, you know, so long as they are appropriately aggrieved by the app, not really aggrieved, but impacted by the application. Someone who becomes a party is an active participant in the hearing. They will be able to cross-examine other parties' witnesses. They'll be able to put their own witnesses on. They'll be able to introduce their own written evidence. And if as a party, if they disagree with the board's final decision on it, being a party, they will be able to appeal that decision to the Court of Common Pleas.
Great.
Peter, real quick, I have a question for you. How does how would someone become a party to the hearing?
At the hearing, I will give this spiel once again, or something very similar. And at the end of it, I will ask, is there anyone who wishes to become a party? And we'll take their name and address down.
Okay.
And the applicant will have the chance to ask questions to determine whether or not the person requesting party status has a right to become a party. To become a party, you really need to be reside or own property close to the subject property. And they will, you know, someone who lives 5 miles away or, you know, that's going to be like, you're not impacted enough to become a party. But if you live, you know, 500 feet away, a couple houses down, that certainly can. So the applicant will have a chance, if they wish, to ask questions to determine whether or not the person requesting party status has the right to that status. But the board will make the final determination. The applicant could object to it, but, you know, that's just something that they could later bring up on appeal if we grant party status to someone and the applicant doesn't agree with that.
Okay. Thank you, Peter.
Yep.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you very much. You guys have a good night, and you're in great hands with Colby, and I'll talk to you guys later.
All right. So just to reiterate, the conditional use hearing is scheduled for November 19th. That is the night that is normally scheduled for Planning Commission. The Planning Commission will not be meeting on that night. And the hearing may last one night, or depending upon how things go, it may get continued to another night that's mutually agreed upon by the township and the applicant. And then once the hearing concludes, we have, I think, 45 days to provide an opinion on the matter. So we'll move back to our regular agenda. Ziegler'sville Road home heating oil release update.
Okay, spoke with DEP, and the DEP, EPA, and Coast Guard have come to an agreement to approve funds to do the assessment on the property. DEP is going to take the lead now on the assessment rather than the EPA. They're going to try one more time to request access, and as they don't expect that to work, they're beginning the legal process to gain access to the property. Also, as I stated last week, we have submitted citations to the local judge's office, Judge Saylor's office, and we have yet to hear back about those citations at this time.
Great. The Browns, have you given them an update on things separately, or?
I see they're not here today, so I will call them tomorrow.
Great. Thank you, Mark. Any questions from the board on this? All right, moving along to our next agenda item, the Perkiomen Watershed Conservancy. Mark, you want to?
Yep, let me get Ryan here.
Ryan.
All right, Ryan, you're live.
Perfect. Well, Mark, this is a new one for me. I don't think we've ever presented an award over Zoom before, but here we go. do you happen to have the award there with you?
I do. I brought it with me.
there it is.
Well, I'm prepared.
Excellent. I had a sample one here just in case. Yeah. So Mark and I met last week, and we presented you guys with an award, and I just want to read a little bit about what that all means. So every year the Conservancy presents a series of awards to local environmental stewards who have made a positive impact in the conservation and preservation of the Perkiomen watershed and its inherent resources. These awards fall into seven different categories. Tonight, or like I said last week, I presented this year's 2020 Municipal Award for Environmental Stewardship to Mark Hudson and Lower Frederick Township. We chose you for this award for four main reasons. First, to commemorate your efforts to conserve and protect open space throughout the Perkiomen watershed and the township. Second, to recognize the work your Parks Board has completed in order to incorporate green infrastructure into park management, including the construction of rain gardens, native plant gardens, and meadows. And third, to recognize the work of your Environmental Action Committee to develop model ordinances and then to provide outreach and education to other developing municipal EACs. And finally, as a thank you for your continued partnership with the Conservancy to support our goals of implementing rain garden plantings, wise use land planning, and the development of the Perkiomen Creek Water Trail. So for your dedication to conserving and protecting Lower Frederick Township, I'm proud to present you with the 2020 Municipal Environmental Award. So thanks, Mark, and Lower Frederick Township.
Thank you, Ryan.
Thank you, Ryan.
I've asked Supervisor Hexter to say a few words on behalf of the board.
Oh, excellent.
Marla.
Of course, I'm talking, I'm muted myself. That's not helpful. There's no lip readers. But in any small township like ours, it's sometimes challenging to get people to step up and do work where they get no remuneration and sometimes no thanks. And so it's really a special occasion like this where we can thank our hardworking volunteers who have really stepped up. Our Environmental Advisory Council that's just stood up about, I think, a year and a half ago. So they're very new. They hit the ground running and got involved in some great activities. And our Park Board that's been working very hard, literally with sweat and pulling weeds and digging and planting. So hard mentally and physically at the rain gardens, at the Village Center Park, and at Cuddy Park. So it's like I said, it's really a wonderful opportunity for us, for the board and the township, to recognize these volunteers and our two organizations, the Park Board and the EAC, for their great work. And we all, I think, want to preserve and protect our environment. And thank you for the award, and thanks to the Park Board and the EAC for their work towards that effort.
Excellent, excellent. And we certainly appreciate partnering with you, and you've made it very easy for us with, you know, like you said, all of the activity and enthusiasm. So it's been a great partnership.
Yes, and thank you to our EAC and our Park Board.
And I think we have some of them here, so I hope for those who weren't able to make it, they'll take these words and the award back to their meeting and make sure to spread share the acknowledgement.
Ryan, before you go,
sure.
Why don't you give a plug for your benefit online auction? How was that?
Hey, that sounds great. So as part of our award ceremony, we typically have a big event held down in Phoenixville, 300 or so people. And as part of that, we give out these awards to, typically 4 to 7 different categories or award winners. But then we also have a silent auction and a raffle and all those kinds of things. So right now we do have our silent auction going on. It's online. So it's an online virtual auction. It's kind of like eBay. So if you're interested in looking for some locally crafted items, so most of it's paintings and crafts that are made by, local artisans, it's all on our website. So PerkiomaWatershed.org. We appreciate all the support for sure.
I don't know about this year, but in previous years, some of our residents have donated some of their artwork.
And this they event. Have again, yep.
Yep.
They always do. It's great. Thanks so much, everybody.
Thank you, Ryan.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, Ryan.
Good night.
Thanks, Mark.
So that brings us to our next agenda item, which is the update on the Perky Oman Library. I think.
Yep. Let me find.
Eileen's here.
There she is. Yep.
Hello.
Hello, Eileen.
The library has had a very challenging year, like everybody else. We did finally complete our construction. Our project cost over $500,000. So it's hard for the library right now, trying to make sure we pay back bills that have to happen. But in the meantime, for library service, the library is currently open 28 hours a week for people to come in and use the library. Almost all full service at this point. The only thing we limit right now is our computer use is by appointment only. If people are not coming in to the library because they're not comfortable, we will still do contactless pickups. They just have to call and schedule so we can get their materials together for them. And we're doing all kinds of programming on Zoom, trying to keep everybody engaged. We also have a small make and take crafts that we're giving to the little guys when they come into the library. Right now we've got upcoming as a little toilet paper owl. He's really, really cute and adorable. And we've got an owl story time coming up, so it ties in. We also have in the fall, we put out our annual appeal. So that's been running since the end of September. And fortunately, it's doing very, very well. So we're trying to keep everything going and have your patrons, your residents come into the library, and we will serve them the best we can. Any questions from the board?
Yeah, I have just one clarification. You said, when does the drive end? You said the fundraiser?
We never quite end. We'll always take money.
Okay, but I thought you said something about the end of, something was finishing the end of, I thought you might have said September, but I thought maybe you meant to say
No, it's in September is when it was originally mailed out.
Okay.
So we're still collecting checks from that. In fact, had a couple come in today. It was very nice.
Great.
Yes.
Marla, I'm sorry. I jumped in front.
Not a problem.
Yes, I just had a question. I know that your construction was a lot more involved than you had expected. Does that mean you've kind of basically rebuilt the building? It's not going to last for like 500 years? I mean, what is the...
Our building now will stand. It's guaranteed to stand for at least 4 decades. Hopefully it'll stand for quite a few more. The sad part is when people do come in the library, they say, gee, what changed? And what changed is the exterior wall was completely rebuilt. When they went into it, they found it was not structurally as sound as it should have been. If we didn't do it, we could have lost the building. So it was definitely a project that needed to happen. It could have been worse if we waited. But the what you can actually see that changes is the glass. Because the windows, when they took the wall apart, all the windows on those walls shattered. It was old, fragile glass, 60-some years old. So now we've got glass block, which actually lets in quite a bit of light. So that's on the back of the building. You'll see that. And on the Church Street side of the building, on the second level, which is the main floor of the library, that also has glass block, because that upper level of the building was replaced. The bottom did not need to be replaced. So it's much more structurally sound and expecting to be around for many, 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 many more years.
Great. Thank you.
Any other questions for Eileen? Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Eileen. Come visit me in the
library. you provide a wonderful service. I know we've spent, my family has used it quite a bit, and we are patrons.
Yes.
Thank you.
Definitely. Thank you.
Yep. Mark, I guess that brings us to administrative actions. Approval of minutes. I think we're only doing one set of minutes tonight. Is that correct, board? I thought I heard some discussion back and forth that we're only going to do the September 22nd minutes. Yes, no?
Yeah, unfortunately, I got the October 6th ones out late, so not everybody had a chance to review them. So, yeah, we're just going to do the September 22nd, and then we'll table the 6th.
Okay. So, can I get a motion to approve our workshop minutes from September 22nd, 2020?
I'll so move.
Arla Hexter makes the motion. Chuck Yeiser will second. Any discussion? All in favor of approving the minutes from our September 22nd, 2020 meeting, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Well, any against? Oh, motion passes unanimously. Thank you. Mark, treasurer's report?
Yep. Thank you, Chuck. The cash balance in the general fund as of October 30th is $1,615,598. The cash balance in the sewer fund as of October 30th is $306,248.54. The list in the checks in the general fund total $140,745.21. This includes our yearly obligation to the police pension fund, which this year is $62,796. And the list of checks in our sewer fund total $274,926.50. And this includes our second payment this year. So every year we have two payments on our sewer loan. So this is the second payment, which is due the day of our next meeting. So I had to get the check in now of $251,996.40. During the month of October, we worked very hard on the 2021 budget, and just earned income tax through October 30th of this year. The cumulative difference between 2020 and 2019 right now is $13,353.73. This is a 1.94% decrease in our 2020 revenue over our 2019 revenue. And just the November distributions will be a good indicator of, you know, what to expect going forward as we get the quarterly payments to the earned income tax. They'll come in November from the third quarter of last of this year.
Great, thank you, Mark. Are there any questions for Mark? So we need a motion to approve the list of checks that Mark discussed in the general fund as well as in the sewer fund, and further move to authorize payment of same. Anybody like to make a motion to approve the list of checks?
Awesome. This is Dan. Oh, go ahead. Noel won.
Noel Halter made the motion. Dan, would you like the second?
I will second the motion.
Dan Orff seconds. Is there any discussion? Okay. All in favor of approving the list of checks as itemized by Mark in the general fund and sewer fund and authorization of payment of same, say aye.
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 Any against? Motion passes unanimously. Great. Thank you, Mark. That brings us up to item D, personnel. So the Lower Frederick Township Board of Supervisors entered into discussions with Chief Maxey regarding a new employment agreement beginning January 2021 and covering a period of 5 years. Chief Maxey's current employment agreement is set to expire on December 31st of this year. The township and the chief have come to a mutual agreement regarding his salary, benefits, and job expectations. These items have been formalized in the form of a new contract agreement. I'd like to put forward a motion that the Board of Supervisors accepts the employment agreement drafted between the township and Chief Maxey, covering his employment beginning January 1st, 2021 and continuing through December 31st, 2025.
This is Dan Orff. I'll so move.
I'll second.
Second to Daniel Orff and makes Daniel Orff approves the motion and then Noel seconds. Is there any discussion? Okay, hearing none, all in favor of approving the employment contract that's drafted between Lower Frederick Township and Chief Maxey, say aye.
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 Any against? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it very much.
You're stuck with us now.
Yeah.
And you with me.
Right.
So that brings us to a public comment on agenda items. Mark, have you anything out there? Or?
I'm not seeing anything. Chuck?
Okay. Should we wait or move on?
I think you're good to go. If it comes up, Al.
You'll stop me.
I'll stop you.
Okay, brings us up to our reports. We'll start with our township engineer.
Thank you, Chuck. Two items on my report tonight. The first is the Goshen Road sidewalk. As the board may be aware, the Goshen Road sidewalk is complete except for application of pavement markings. The pavement markings should be going in late this week. We're recommending consideration of a progress payment to the contractor in the amount of $88,953.01. You may recall the project was awarded with a change order at $105,205. The construction contract is on track to come in slightly under budget at $102,245. This is a project that's grant funded with a match, and that agreement describes the county reimbursing up to $102,533 to match a township contribution of $22,507. In answer to a question that Supervisor Hexter raised last week, the township may in fact submit to the county for reimbursement of payment number one and then submit again after final payment. Alternately, the township could assemble one request after all payments are made. It could be done either way. So that's Goshen Road sidewalk. With a recommendation to the board for action on payment. On Swamp Creek Road, the township was awarded a grant for installation of a culvert under Swamp Creek Road. The grant amount of $77,784 is expected to pay for both bidding and construction of the project. So upon board authorization, the township will execute the dirt, gravel, and low volume road project agreement to secure that grant money. Looking forward, we suggest the board authorize preparation of the bid documents before December so that the project can be advertised in January and bids open in February. With a March award, work could be underway in April or May of 2022. 1. Those are the items on my report tonight. I'd be happy to answer any questions the board may have on these items.
Great, thank you, Carol. Are there any questions for our engineer on either of these items?
So, Carol, is that payment included in our checklist, or do we need to vote on that separately?
We need to vote on that separately.
Okay.
And I guess we need to make a motion first, right, Chuck?
Yes. Right. Okay. Right. A motion to approve payment to GMB Construction.
Okay. I move to approve the payment to GMB Construction Group for the amount of $88,953.01.
Thank you.
Dan Orff makes the motion. Can I get a second?
I'll second.
Marla Hexter seconds. Is there any discussion?
No, the only question I have, and maybe this is for Mark because you're managing the day-to-day expenses, are we better off asking for reimbursement now or waiting for the final payment? What do you think?
We're going to try to do it in two. We're allowed to do it in two. So I think we have to wait for a canceled check. So we got to get this check out to them. So there's a good possibility that we could get this larger payment in this year from the county. I would expect the next one would be probably in. Now that it didn't get, I was hoping it would get all done, but they're a little, the getting the paint guy out spent a little longer than expected. So we'll probably end up getting the little bit left in the next, in 2021. Sorry.
Okay.
But we're going to try to get it all in 2020.
So it sounds like we should ask for reimbursement on this part and not for the other.
I think so. Yes.
Okay. Any other discussion on this item? All right. All in favor of, approving the payment to GMB Construction as delineated by Supervisor Orff, say aye.
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 Any against? Motion carries unanimously. The other thing that we need to take action on is approving the Swamp Creek culvert grant with the Montgomery County Conservation District.
To sign the paperwork.
Right. I'll be happy to make the motion that we approve the Swamp Creek Culvert Grant.
I'll second.
Chuck Geiser makes the motion. Noel Halter seconds. Is there
Are we approving the grant? I thought.
We have to sign something that commits the township that we're accepting the grant. Is that right, Mark?
Correct.
Okay.
Yep.
So we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of approving the Swamp Creek Culvert Grant, say aye.
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 Any against? Motion carries unanimously. Carol, that's the end of your report. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right, thank you. That brings us to Township Staff Reports and Chief Maxey.
Thank you. During the month of October, the police department was involved in handling 213 calls for service. The police department took delivery on the Shield 12 speed display unit, which the board was so gracious to approve last month. And the police department is currently receiving training on how to use the piece of equipment. We're hoping to have it deployed later this month. Residents that are interested in having the speed display unit displayed in their neighborhoods are asked to give a phone call to the police department. They can ask for Corporal Milligan or myself, and we'd be happy to put them on a rotational list so that we make sure that everybody gets equal access. In an effort to bring our police department into compliance with the presidential executive order on safe policing that was signed several months ago, our agency has begun the process to make sure that we are 100% in compliance. And this is done by drafting a letter after we go through a self-assessment process to a credentialing body in Pennsylvania that happens to be the Pennsylvania Chiefs of Police Association. And it basically is going to identify that our policies and practices are in compliance with the requirements identified in the order. And I'm actually very happy to report to the board that we had very minor adjustments that needed to be made. Most of our policies that were currently in place and being utilized meet all of the requirements set forth in the order. And ultimately, what this is going to do is that it will make us available for Department of Justice discretionary funding in the future. So in essence, it's a voluntary compliance, but I think it's very much needed to not only show that our police department is supportive of the reforms that are in place, but also that we are providing a top level of service to our residents or to people that we would come into contact with. We are hoping to submit this paperwork within the next 2 weeks for review. And finally, the police department received checks totaling the amount of $582.49 from District Court 38-203. And these monies represent traffic and criminal fines paid by defendants in various matters brought before the court. And that's the conclusion of my report.
Thank you, Chief. Are there any questions for the Chief Maxey? So, Chief, my understanding, if somebody wants the I'll call it radar unit, sure, they need to contact the department and let them know. I guess you will decide where the appropriate place to put it is, right?
Sure. And this is why we're going through training. I mean, this is a pretty high-tech piece of equipment that we have here. And in order for us to get the maximum information data and also effect out of it, we're all going through training. The training is being done online, kind of in a webinar type of atmosphere. And we're just scheduling it based on the officer's availability. And once that is done, what we will do is we will just take phone calls from residents that are interested if they have a concern in their specific neighborhood. We obviously know that there are certain roadways that we hear about all the time, kind of in the Springmount section of the township, but we would like to kind of push this out to other areas. And any resident that has a concern or believes that there is speeding on their roadway taking place, we're happy to deploy it. And the great thing about this unit is that we get the visual impact of it, but we're also going to have a data source for collecting information so that it's going to help us for future enforcement efforts.
Okay. So my question is for Mark and Chief. I'm assuming once you're trained, maybe we, since we have, 22 people on this meeting, somehow make the public aware in a broader sense of the existence of this device, right? And how you want to do that, I'll leave it up. We should probably leave it up to you two.
That sounds great. We'll talk about it. I think maybe putting it up on our website would obviously be the biggest thing to do, and just maybe continue to mention it at some future meetings.
Okay. I'm sure there's going to be trial and error involved to figure out how to do it, but
yeah, absolutely.
Really get through it. Thank you.
Thank you.
That brings us to roads and parks.
Okay. During the month of October, the Public Works Department worked to rake and get Foy Park seeded from the gravel bar that we received during the flood in August. The Public Works crew, along with Upper Frederick, Perkiomenville, and Upper Salford, paved Evergreen Road. We completed 9 sewer inspections. We're beginning to prepare the snow plows and trucks for the winter weather. And I don't know if anyone saw it, but we actually had flurries on Monday morning. If anybody was outside at the exact right moment as the one dark cloud came over, I did see some flurries. And Schwenk Road was paved by our equipment contract. And we will be getting the white lines on that road also at the end of this week.
Any questions for our manager on the roads and bridges report? Or I should say roads and parks. Great. Thank you, Mark. I guess that brings us right to your manager's report and the 2021 budget.
Give me a second. All right, going to do the budget presentation. It is pretty much the exact same presentation as last time. Not much has changed, but I just wanted to run through it again, especially if we have anybody new on the call. So today is November 4th, and if the board approves, we'll have the tentative adoption of the 2021 township budget. Then tomorrow, the budget would be available for public review at the township building, and we would be putting out an advertisement probably on Friday or Saturday, letting everyone know that the budget was advertised and that it is available for review. COVID-19, again, is the biggest effect that the township has seen is through the earned income tax. Like I just stated earlier, right now we're about $13,000 behind where we were this time in 2019. Berkheimer, who collects the earned income tax, is still, you know, giving us estimates of $3,800 to $4,200 a month. So again, we were conservative in our budget numbers for next year with that in mind. This year we're still doing well, and we hope to continue to do well. Again, in January, February, we collected the fourth quarter payments from EIT from 2019. So before any of us even knew what COVID-19 was, the beginning of this year, we were still collecting earned income tax from that. Things that are going to affect earned income tax is how many employees will be called back to work, how many employees will remain at work if the Paycheck Protection Program runs out of money. What's the long-term economic impact that we still have yet, you know, will be for a while? And how many businesses will never reopen and jobs that are permanently lost? If you watch the news, I mean, I think we're really seeing that in the retail and the food industry, you know, are really suffering. General Fund 2020, again, the real estate tax collections are on par with past years, where they seem to have come in right where they normally do. Real estate transfer tax is very strong and above budget estimates. Right now, we're 30-some thousand over what we had estimated in the budget. The earned income tax we just spoke about is, you know, almost around 2% below where it was in 2019. The cable franchise fees continue to decrease as people are moving away from cable and just getting internet and using the online services. Permits for building and zoning are over budget this year. Many people who stayed home and didn't go on vacations, we've seen a big uptick in permits. Overall, we're expecting our revenue to be slightly higher than budgeted in 2020. That does include, we do have to get the money back from the county for the sidewalk. Expenditures, due to the COVID-19 pandemic, the township's staff took a very conservative approach to spending money and tried to save wherever we could. We're seeing savings in engineering, insurance, legal fees, ice and snow removal. We are seeing overages in the building inspector group of line items, but again, that is due to the all the permits that we've received, so they kind of offset each other. And expenditures will come in under budget in 2020. General fund next year. Expect revenue to continue to be flat or decrease a little. Earned income tax, expecting it to continue to decrease a little bit. Permits, new home construction is where the higher dollar permits are, and we'll be seeing less new homes next year. Real estate transfer tax is also expected to slow down a little bit. We won't be having those new homes being sold. And again, I'll say that the cable franchise agreements continue to, you know, to become less and less every year. Just so everyone understands kind of where their taxes go, the total taxes paid by a resident on a home assessed at $130,027 is $5,355. You can kind of see in the bottom right corner the tax bills. The red is what goes to the school district, the 84%, and then the township and county splits up the other 16% of what our residents pay in taxes. To the county, they pay 3.46 mils or $450. And then they also pay a little bit to the community college at $51. The tax that comes directly to the township is $306. And then we have taxes that go to the fire company at $35 and the ambulance at $26. So if you add all that up with the school district's amount, then, like I said, the average home assessed at $130,027 pays $5,355 in taxes. Just this kind of is the same pie chart that was in the bottom corner there. It just breaks up the percentages that go to the township, the fire company, the ambulance, and the county. Expected revenue in 2021 remains at $1,914,625. Taxes, you know, would be the main portion of that. Then we have license and permits, fines and forfeits, interest. Unfortunately, our interest is going down just with the economy. The interest rates are way down. Intergovernmental agreements, and then charges for service and other revenue. General fund expenditures that we're looking at for 2021. We're working with the park board for park improvements and programming, doing line painting, body cameras for the police department. Again, we're gonna look for grants, and we already have some lines on grants for that. MS4 stormwater ordinance. MS4 is our municipal separate storm sewer system, which is a permit that we get from DEP. It's a 5-year permit, but we're coming to the end of our 5 years, and we have to update our stormwater ordinance before we put in for our new permit. As the township talked about tonight, our telecommunication ordinance is outdated, so we've already begun working on that to bring that into 2021. So we need to do that with some other ordinance also. We also talked about the Swamp Creek culvert grant, but we'll do that project. So the one thing that I didn't have information on at our meeting last week, and unfortunately it is a big number, the emergency generator for the township building, including the police and the administrative areas, has an estimated cost at $150,000. I do want to stress that this is one quote. I'm not saying that that's what we're going to spend, but unfortunately, that's all I was able to get. I did have another gentleman, funny, I had a gentleman call me back today that I contacted 3 weeks ago to come out, and he is going to come out next week. The other thing that I want to stress here is, so this emergency generator that I had quoted is kind of what I think everyone would be thinking, is it runs the whole building, it runs the HVAC, it has an automatic transfer switch, so if we lose electric, the generator realizes that, it quickly switches over, turns on, and the whole building is back up and running. I've already started to have conversations with the chief to really determine, is that what we need, or, you know, can we do some modifications? So I did put this number in the budget, but I want to stress that I want to do a lot of more research. Again, I had a lot of trouble getting this quote. It has not been easy. And I also want to now sit with everyone and kind of see where we can go. So this is, I don't want to say top of the line because I'm not talking about the equipment, but this runs everything right away. So maybe the building, we may not need all of that. We may not need everything to run as soon as electric goes out. So want to start looking at some other options also. But at this time, that is the number that is in the budget.
Sorry. And then another thing, just for clarification, that would not run the ambulance area.
That would not run the ambulance side. So I've spoken to the ambulance. They tried to send me a document that had their electric bill. So in our electric room in the basement of the township building, the township has one pico meter and the ambulance has its own pico meter. So the service comes into the township. It is then split, and they have their own meter that they pay for, and we have ours. So it does make it very difficult with the transfer switches. I think we would need, because of the way our building is laid out, we would be up to 3 transfer switches, and the automatic transfer switches, with the way this gentleman quoted it, are fairly pricey. They're actually become a big part of the project. So it was $30,000 estimate to include the ambulance. I am talking with them, but it's $30,000 more. But I have to get their PICO bills, and they tried to send it to me. Their document didn't work, so they're going to bring them up. So I am talking to them, and we're going to look into that as an option also.
Mark, this is Chuck. When you say $30,000 more, is that a cost of a transfer switch or the cost of a transfer switch and also a larger generator?
Yes, thank you. That was a larger generator and a transfer switch and all the wiring and everything internal. Okay. So if we would buy this generator, there would be a construction project at the building. We'd build a pad, set the generator with a crane, run all the electric into the building. Whatever they have to do to interrupt the service to get the transfer switch in, get it all done so that when they would leave, if the building would lose electric within seconds, that generator would sense that there's no electric, it would turn on and power the whole building. No one, like currently, if we lose electric, we have to go outside. If we could start the generator that we have, you'd start it, then you have to switch a switch in the closet, then you got to go in another closet and switch another switch and everything until you would be able to have power.
And even at that, the full building would not have power with the existing setup, right?
Correct. We have some orange outlets in every room, and the orange outlets run. We're still trying to figure out if any AC units or heat units would run with that system now. We don't think it would. So, but there's, like I said, I want to stress, unfortunately, I was only able to get one quote. The quote just came in Monday. It was much, much higher than I expected. So I want to stress that we do a lot more research and, you know, definitely bring everything to the board before anything would happen. You know, to make sure that everything, we need to dive a little deeper into it now that we got this price.
So Mark, I guess it sits between it's between the meter and the circuit breaker box, I would imagine, and it automatically fails over so that the circuit breakers don't flip in the case of like a power surge that would normally take out your power.
I think the transfer switch, I think all of the electric comes into the transfer switch, so the so the transfer switch would be after the.
Yeah, I guess you still need a circuit breaker box in case something piece of equipment to be shut down.
Yeah,
I'm diving into details. Yeah, it's fine. We'll look at it later. I was just curious. You would want to flip off, let's say the printer was messed up or something, and you want to shut that down separately to figure out what the issue is.
Yeah. Okay, the way this would be is, yes, I mean, the circuit breakers and everything would all run just normal, whether it was on regular Pico power or if it was on the generator. They wouldn't know the difference. It would happen before any power got to the panels.
Okay.
I apologize. That makes sense. I'm not an electrician, so I'm...
Neither am I.
I'm trying my best here with electrical talk.
Well, okay.
We know it's been a process. I know you first talked about you were looking into it over the summer, and you know, to get people to respond competently, it's been a process. I see Warren has his hand up.
Yep.
Just one quick question first, Mark. What's the lifespan on this kind of a piece of equipment?
I would say you'd be looking at, you know, probably 20 to 30 years.
Yeah, I would hope so. Thanks.
Uh-huh. Yes, Warren?
Am I unmuted?
No. Yep.
Yes.
No. Hold on, you muted yourself. Hold on. There you go, Warren, you're good.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah, I'd like to talk about where this fits in our priorities. So we haven't had an emergency generator system for a pretty long time. The incidences where we would actually need it and how important that it would be, I don't know. I would have to hear that from somebody. The other thing that we've been out without for a really long time is the ability to hear each other in township meetings in the meeting room. And I'm wondering why that never got up on the priority list like this emergency generator did. That actually has to do with civil discussion with, you know, everybody getting along in the township.
I was looking into the thing and had a little bit in the budget for that for next year to try to get some things into the room to help dampen the sound in the big boardroom. I think we'll still be able to do that. The emergency generator is, you know, we're with the police department needing to have electric, and Chief, what is the, sorry, I'm drawing a blank. With the power plant.
The nuclear power plant, we're in within that 10-mile radius.
So we have an emergency.
The emergency management service?
Shelter, Mark?
Yeah, I think it's emergency management committee, is that it?
Well, we're an emergency management system, and every year they come out and do an inspection, and you have to have a generator to run the building if the electric's out. And we have to do a little bit more research to see if we're considered a warming shelter and that kind of stuff. But that's why I was stressing that, you know, it was a shock to the system to get this cost estimate. The chief and I already began discussions about, you know, is this really what we need, or can we pare it down to what we really need? So I do apologize. I wish I had better information and more. I do want to stress that this is very high end, like a high number. I understand that. And would do a lot of research and bring a lot of options to the board before I would by any means suggest this first.
From personally checking into these myself, I'm not terribly surprised by the number you came up with for just residential units. They're in the at least the ones that automatically switch you over and will allow your entire house to work. You're in the tens of thousands of dollars. But the question, one question I had for you, Mark, is, you know, on units like this, is there any possibility to pay for it? I don't know whether we are allowed to pay for things like this over time as a township. But
I called a leasing company after I got this quote, but with the election day, I didn't hear back from them yet.
Okay.
So that was another option I was looking at, but again, I understand this is a very high number, and Probably a shock to everybody's system.
Yeah, I guess my other question would be, you know, if there's any annual like service costs to, you know, have somebody come out and make sure it's, you know, whatever that's going to be.
Yeah, there would be. It's a diesel. So it'd be running, you know, some diesel. Emergency generators turn on once a week for an hour or two just to exercise the engine. They don't switch the building over. They just turn on so that the engine, you know, gets oil through it and everything. But yes, there would be a yearly cost to service the generator. We have had that in the past at the township building with the old generator that we do have.
I know some of them run off of propane versus diesel. So I don't know whether we have propane already at the township building.
There's natural gas in the road, but you'd have to bring that in. There's no natural gas that actually goes into the building. So with the contractor that I spoke with, you would pay a monthly fee to have that natural gas at the building and kind of on standby. So if you don't use it a lot, you're paying for kind of like a standby.
Usually natural gas and propane are cheaper than diesel. Well, I don't know. I don't know what the prices are anymore. It doesn't matter. I was just curious as a point of, okay, more research.
Yep.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Warren, for your comment.
Right. I also have a comment from Lawrence Cohen. Price seems high for just the township building. Does the sewer plant have an emergency generator capacity? The sewer plant does have a generator that runs the plant. There's not much room at the plant to, you know, set up any kind of anything. And there's also no internet or anything at the sewer plant.
Yeah, it's quite a large generator.
Yes. All right, so what I did for you here, for expenditures, I gave you the original budget amount from what we talked about last week, and then I gave you the amount with the generator in it. So the original budget amount that we talked about last year was, or last week, was $2,053,750. With the updated budget numbers and adding in that $150,000 for the generator as a quote was $2,198,250. We could pass the budget at the $2,198,025 minus 150 and move forward with that, and then we can readjust the budget next year if we come up with an idea. For the time being, I just put that number in there. Again, if we pass the budget with that number, it will show as a negative that would be able to be covered by the deficit, and then we can get something in underneath that. We can put a note in the budget that this is for an emergency generator, and we'll be doing more research to get, you know, the best option for the township.
Any further questions for Mark before we move on? Okay, Mark.
This just shows everything as a percentage, which is just from the last slide. All right, again, so the general fund expected revenue in 2021 is $1,914,625. The expected 2021 expenditures from the original plan that I gave you was $2,053,750. With the adjusted and the adding in the generator, we're at $2,198,250. You know, the budget deficit that we talked about last week was 139, 125. We did do some small adjustments to the budget numbers and the budget deficit with the generator included at $150,000 is $283,625. Again, as of October 30th, the township had $1,615,598 in reserves, and Lower Frederick can consider utilizing those reserves to cover any anticipated budget deficit. Any questions on the general fund before I move on?
Not so much a question, but I guess a comment. I know we've been talking in the recent past about doing like a capital budget, and just, you know, things like this purchase of a generator is a big capital expense. It doesn't happen all the time. So it's one of those things we, like other big purchases, we can plan for and
Yeah, in the next year, I'd like to put together a, you know, an equipment replacement plan, you know, guide that we can keep together. And then we did talk about that last week, implementing a capital improvements fund where you'd put some money every year, and then when a big expense would come up, it would be waiting to help offset those costs. The sewer fund, again, everything is pretty much the same as we talked about last week. All the expenses, you know, were anticipated that we're seeing. Sewer connection fees were budgeted at 110. We're currently at 148. Sewer rent has been consistent. Expected to end at budget around 760,000. Total budget revenue for 2020 was 909,448. And we estimate the end of year to be at $956,197. Expenses we did the sewer loan refinance, so we showed a savings there. Sludge hauling, we're doing very well with that this year. That's expected to come in significantly lower than budgeted. And all other line items are expected to end near budgeted numbers. With the 2020, we submitted for reimbursement to DCED for the grant. If we get that money in, we'll expect to see the sewer budget end, you know, near even or slightly positive. 2021, around 1,100 sewer customers or EDUs, 175 a quarter, $700 per year, or around $770,000 in sewer rent. New customers' connection fees, a new EDU is $7,405.26. Next year, we're just going to budget for three new EDUs, and that would be $22,215.78. '20-'21 sewer fund expenses. The sewer loan is a major expense each year. In 2020, we did the refinancing of the loan. In 2021, our loan payment will be approximately $70,000 less. Our 2021 loan payment will be $506,663.25. In 2020, we hired a new wastewater engineer. Our major costs for the wastewater treatment plant are the sludge hauling. Again, we've been consistent this year and are showing a significant savings and hope to continue that next year. The chemicals, we're in the process of reviewing those and are going to try to meet with a new chemical company next week to discuss their options for us and see what the budget savings would be by moving to the new chemical company. And utilities, the electric from all the pumps and everything running. So we're looking to do an RFP to electric companies to explore savings opportunities there. And then maintenance and repair, you know, taking care of the planters, one of the other major expenses. So the sewer loan, you can see what it was this year, is in the gray. and the maroon red is the original loan. So the gray is the refinanced loan. So you can kind of get a look at how that's saving us money as we move forward. We did not change the term, just the interest rate. So the expected 2021 sewer fund expenditures are shown here in the pie chart. Employees, engineering, the plant operations, sludge hauling at 11%, legal, work on the sanitary sewer, and then you see the major, the 55% is the debt, and then that's broken into the 32% for the principal and the 23% for the interest. So our total expected sewer fund expenditures is $914,763. Looking at in the spreadsheet, you see the total revenue at $793,500 and the total expenses at $914,763. With the current budget projections, again, the sewer fund will have a deficit of $121,263, and that would be able to be covered by the sewer fund reserves. That does not, I'm not speaking about the money that we have for the sewer expansion. That's in sewer capital, and this is just in our regular sewer fund.
Mark, sorry, what was our deficit this year?
Our anticipated deficit was around that $121,000, but this year it's going to come in pretty much even. So we may even be positive just a little bit. So we covered, we will not have a deficit of any major amount this year. If we don't get the refund from the small waters grant, it'll probably come in January, but you know, in the budget figure. So then we may show a small deficit, but then that money would come in this year, in 2021.
Yeah, I guess just my concern for the longer term is this is like a, you know, this is like a 25% of the budget deficit. It's pretty large. So we can't, it's not sustainable over the medium to long term.
Yes, I agree. Liquid fuels. In 2020, we paved Evergreen Road and we paved Schwank Road. In 2021, we were supposed to pave 2nd and Woodside, but we brought back on that we pulled back on that with the storm that we had, the tropical storm in August. So next year, we will go and get those paved, 2nd Avenue, Woodside Avenue, and add on 3rd Avenue as it's in pretty rough shape, short road right in that same area of 2nd and Woodside. We will be putting the salt purchases for snow removal into the liquid fuels budgets, which we did last year also, or this year. And the again, looking to purchase a 550 dump truck to replace the current 550 dump truck. We would sell the current truck that we have through the auction, looking to do a 5-year lease to own or a 5-year loan, whichever we can receive the better interest rate for. The 550 that we have right now is one of our major trucks that we use throughout the year. It gets used for plowing. It gets used for whenever we're doing pothole patching, any of that work. There's 2,732 hours on the engine, 33,000 in miles. We did talk to Reuters, who has worked on the truck several times this year, and he is in agreement that it is in need to be replaced. So this is one of the major trucks that we use. The other important thing, so we have three trucks, really, major trucks that we put out in the snowstorm. We have the two bigger dump trucks. The one is a CDL. The one is just under CDL, and then we have this truck. So this, and then this truck is the one that gets used most of the time throughout the year for most of our projects and everything for moving dirt and pothole patching, towing the trailer with the mowers on it. So with this truck, it allows us, you know, when the guys go out to do a circuit plowing, the 550 can hold enough salt so that it can make it through a whole circuit before having to come back to the yard to refill. So it gets the guys out there on the, you know, on the snowstorms and takes care of that for us. So again, that would be a 5-year lease to own or 5-year loan. We would definitely look to find the best interest rate and the best deal that we could. So that would be you buy the cab and chassis, and then you take it to an upfitter who puts on the dump truck bed and the plow and the lights and all that kind of stuff.
Hey, Mark. Just with respect to, and this is just so I can have, hopefully this is something you can provide to us so that we have more data points. And just from my own knowledge, from the standpoint of major pieces of equipment like this, do we have an inventory presently with like anything that indicates their service record, length of use, projected longevity, that kind of stuff, so that I feel like I'd like to make an informed decision related to this. I'm not saying it's not an appropriate expenditure, or uh-huh. I'm just saying an inventory would help me.
Okay. Yes, lot. I can get you that.
Okay. I'm curious to hear if any of the other board members have any thoughts on that.
We have a 2013, which is our big dump truck, which is the CDL. And then the rest of our trucks, this is a 2005, the one that I'm suggesting we replace because it's the one that we use the most. We have a 2001 International. It looks like a CDL truck, but it's not. But that's one of the bigger trucks that we have. And it really gets used mostly for snow plowing and getting the snow off the road. It gets used throughout the year a little bit, but it's not the workhorse of the force. Right. And then we have a 2008 and a 2004, but I can get you all that, Dan, without a problem.
Yeah. Okay. And I guess the other corollary to that is, I know they have big things that they, I sound real intelligent here. I know there's large pieces of equipment that they attach to these dump trucks to use for either bush cutting the side of the road or plowing and so forth. So I don't know, I don't know whether we have one plow that we hook to the front of the truck or three, so I hate to be a stickler, but it would be nice to have some kind of inventory of the large pieces of equipment that we have.
Not a problem. I'll get that out to you tomorrow.
Thanks, Mark. To be
pest. No, you're fine. That's good. That's why we're here.
Yeah, it would be agreed. It will be helpful, just so we know.
Okay. All right. Not a problem.
So, the idea here is we're budgeting a certain amount. How we get there is a different story. But that's what we have in the budget now. Is that my understanding?
Yeah, it would be approximately $22,000 a year for 5 years.
And the newest truck that we have is what, a 2013, I think I heard you saying.
Yeah, yep, that's the CDL.
Okay.
But this is out of the liquid fuels budget, not out of operating funds.
Right.
Correct. Yep.
And Mark, I guess along with that, what Dan was saying about the inventory, when you track expenses, do you do it by vehicle as well? Is that something that's available? I just noticed this past month was a pretty expensive one for our 2001 or 2005 vehicles.
Yeah, yep, I can get you that also. It's in the report each month. I have to sort it, but yes, I can get you that.
Okay, and is that...
I think this year on this 550, I want to say we're over $5,000 in maintenance.
Yeah, I think it was 10,000 between the two of them just last month.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, as you plow with trucks and you're running them with salt and everything, the things start to degrade pretty fast. And then just the wear and tear on the vehicle from plowing, is also pretty rough on the vehicles.
Sure. Yeah, I'm just trying to get an idea when I'm seeing the 2020 spend versus the budget. We're going to expect that the repairs, if we do purchase this vehicle, that the repairs should go down.
Yes.
You're showing 5,000 lower this year. So I just wanted to make sure I'm understanding.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. All right. And then by doing smaller projects and, by doing smaller projects this year and then next year, that'll save, we'll save some money in our liquid fuels. We'll build up, a little bit of reserve, and then 2022, we can do a larger project. By 2022, continuing with the dump truck and the salt purchases, we should have around $250,000 that we can do a big project with or more. So that's the goal of liquid fuels moving forward there.
Yeah. Mark, just one corollary statement. I want to commend you and the crew for the collaboration efforts you've been doing with the surrounding townships to leverage partnerships like that. That's working out to be advantageous for all the communities involved. So that you deserve some serious praise for putting that on, getting stuff like that done. So we appreciate that.
Yeah, it's a great relationship that we have with the neighboring communities, and it is good. We bring the paver, they bring, they have some triaxles and some bigger dump trucks, so they can get more material to us, and then somebody else brings over a roller, so you got two rollers running, and yeah, it's great. The relationships that we have with our neighboring communities is really good. It's really nice to see.
And commendable effort on your part in that of the team. So thank you.
Yep. All right. Next, I have questions.
Any questions for Mark at this time? I don't see any.
You're right.
Well, that I don't brings see any us either. To the last slide there, right?
Yep. So to move forward with the budget process, we have to make a motion to authorize the advertisement and tentative approval of the budget. We can tweak the budget a little bit, and obviously we'll look at all that, and we'll continue to look at everything. So the numbers that I put in the bottom there do include the generator. Again, I want to stress, I know that is a high number. I'm not saying that we even do it, but, it is, we've had a generator. It just gave up its ability to work. We've had a couple of people look at it. But definitely want to do a lot more research, really see what we need to run, see if we can just replace, just running those orange outlets. And go from there and really hopefully bring things down quite a bit.
So you need a motion to basically authorize the advertisement and tentative approval of the budgets as presented tonight.
Yep. And then we can either, you can advertise it with the generator, or we can pull that out, or we can change that number. I mean, you guys can authorize it with whatever number there you want.
Mark, would I be correct by saying that you have the budget maybe tweak 10% per line item, 25 within a category? That can be done up until what, February of 2021?
No, that can be done up until the time that we pass the budget. when you pass the budget, then the tweaking is over. If you want to do anything in the new year, you'd have to reopen the budget.
Gotcha. Okay.
And then you have to re-advertise and all that.
Understood. We have until whenever we approve it in December, right?
Yep.
Yeah, and also, I mean, the budget's a planning document. I mean, we may not spend money, we may spend over. Hopefully, you keep within it. But as we learned from this year, it can be different.
So just because we have the $150,000 for the generator doesn't necessarily mean we're committed to spending that money.
Correct, correct. And I'm not suggesting that.
That we do.
Like I said, I only got one quote. I mean, I would never really want to bring you anything with only one quote, but I've had such a difficult time getting a quote that that's all I have to give you.
Right. Yeah. Chuck, I'd be all right with making, I could make the motion if you'd like.
That'd be fine, Dan.
Yeah. Okay. I move to authorize the advertisement and tentative approval of the 2021 budget as presented. I guess in the amounts as shown here, which is, do I state the amounts?
I think it's just as presented. I mean,
as presented.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll second it. So Dan Orff makes the motion. Chuck Yizer seconds it. Is there any further discussion on the budget?
Yeah, I guess I don't want to drag this out, but so can you remind me again for the sewer fund, what's our reserve at this moment?
Right now it's around 300,000. So that's kind of a little off. So the end of the month was Saturday. Mm-hmm. So all these reports were run on Friday. And then, we're still, as people postmark their bill by Saturday. So we're kind of like the election. We're still getting payments that are just being mailed in. We're expecting quite a bit more money to come in.
Yeah, I guess I'm just looking at the big numbers here, and at the general fund, large reserve, we're able to pull some levers as needed to adjust throughout the year from the sewer. Yep. I feel like the expense is pretty locked in. We're, if we're doing a run rate here, it'll be about 3 years until we run out of money.
Mm-hmm.
So
if nothing else goes wrong.
Right.
Yeah, no, you're right. This is a discussion we need to maybe look at further early in the new year.
Yeah. I mean, we're hoping maybe to have some savings. We don't know when, in the area of the chemicals and the electric, but we don't know what that's going to be yet.
Yeah, but at the tune of 120,000 a year, I'm just not seeing it. So when you look at a warning sign, there's no doubling of anything. We don't want to be doubling anything, but incremental increases go pretty long way when it comes to deficits. I just want everyone to think about it, that we're watching this coming.
Right.
I think the important thing for people to understand is the last time they saw a raise, it was a doubling, and that is something none of us want to do. But this kind of a deficit is really unsustainable in anything but the very short term. So we'd have to figure out a way that makes sense both for our budget and for the customers.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'm in total agreement with you, Terry. It's something maybe we need to look at pretty soon.
Oh, yeah, Bob Burns, Chuck.
Yeah, go ahead, Bob.
Hey, Chuck, Bob Burns, Riverville Road. Mark, I guess I'm still a little confused on where this deficit for the sewer is coming from. It sounds like what you're saying is that after you're paying this next loan payment, that the funds available in the sewer checking account are in this $300,000 range. Is that where you're making the deficit up, by the sewer payments that are in that checking account, or is there actually a CD that is still labeled towards the sewer capitalization, if I'm saying it right. I'm not sure if I am or not. I know
this is coming from the sewer fund. It has nothing to do with the money that is in the loan.
So this is the operating fund.
Yeah, this is the operating fund for the sewer. This is the sewer fund. It is not the sewer capital fund. There's two,
right? So
5 million in that fund, and no, we're not touching that for the general operations of the system.
No, so I think you cleared it up for me. So when you're saying it's the ongoing expenses of the, call it the checking account for the sewer fund, to go ahead and make that deficit up by that, that's just going to delay the deficit even more by next year at this time.
Yeah, that's what Terry was saying.
Mentioned.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I was trying to listen in and call in and you know, get on the call, but I don't know that we have done that in the past that way. I understand, as Marla just say, that this isn't a way to keep on doing things, and I know I've asked other questions in the past as to, you know, how we're going to get there. I just don't see how we can go ahead and take that money from that operating expenses that are coming in from all the sewer customers to cover that deficit for this year. So just my observation there. Getting back to your dump truck over the 5-year period of time, and thank you for asking writers to take a look at the existing vehicle. And I think you made it clear today, maybe I didn't understand it last week, that this would be a replacement now for the existing vehicle, and the existing vehicle would be sold at auction or whatever. Yes. Based on the information you just gave, it sounded like the vehicle had around 33 or 35,000 miles on it. Not that it was used hard, as far as, you know, the expenses that are concerned there. You also mentioned that it is one of our plow vehicles that we use and one of our salt vehicles that we use. And I know that we've had an issue in the past with the normal maintenance done by our people, where that particular dump body had some issues. I believe it was a year or so ago, where the pivot point is, where it's mounted to the body, where the hinge joints, where they constantly get greased and whatnot, might've been overlooked. And, with the salt and everything else, that dries everything out. And if we're not doing our own maintenance,
okay,
that causes a problem. So to look at spending $100,000+ over a 5-year period of time, it could be another issue.
So first, thank you for your comment. And I think what your concern is that we, if we're buying a new vehicle, that we look after the maintenance so we're not hit with incidentals down the road. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if the body fell off a year or so ago and we had to weld it back on, you know, that's not good. So, yes, our normal maintenance by the driver or whoever, you know, on all of our vehicles, you know, it doesn't take much to hit it with the pressure washer after each and every storm to, you know, to keep things clean and not, you know, disrespect that. So, you know, just looking at the cost of the vehicle at this point in time with all its outfitted things that are needed, it's between that $100,000 and $110,000
right.
Dollar range. So,
okay. Thank you, Bob.
Just wanted to bring that to your guys' attention as well.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. So,
all right,
I think Dan made a motion.
Chuck, I have another.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry. Comment from Amy Sachs. To help with the, this is sewer fund, to help with the deficit, wouldn't additional sewer hookups help, like approving some of the developments that are in the docket? That could add to the, yes, any new hookups would add to the funding of the sewer. Any developments that we have on the docket right now are, you know, a couple, I would say a couple of years from starting. So they're going to be a little bit out before we would expect to get anything from them to help with the deficit.
It would certainly, you know, every little bit helps. I mean, you're talking $700, you know, whatever, 30, 40 homes, is whatever that is, you know, 20, 30,000 bucks. It's not going to solve the problem. And if you have to put a pump station in, then you might as well take off a bunch of those homes right away just to run the pump station. So it does help, but it's not a panacea.
Not next year anyway.
Right. Yep.
Just another quick comment. We have Joe Zolmick with us from the press. So if a deficit is covered, no tax increase is anticipated. Yes, that is correct. The next year, the general fund and the sewer fund would, you know, be covered by our savings, and not proposing any tax increase in 2021.
So we have a motion and a second, and we've had some discussion. Are we comfortable voting at this point?
Sorry, I just don't remember who made the second.
I believe I seconded. Dan made the motion, and then Dan made the motion, and Chuck Yizer seconded.
Okay.
So are we, is there any more discussion? Are we
in a not position? Seeing anything, Chuck?
So all in favor of authorizing the advertisement and tentative approval of the 2021 budget as presented tonight, say aye.
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 Okay. Any against? Hearing none, the motion passes unanimously. Thank you, Mark. I know that you put a lot of work into this, trying to get us the most accurate numbers.
I will continue to.
Yeah.
Give me a second here.
So that brings us to township boards and commission reports. Planning Commission. I know, I think I saw Phil Smith in the audience. I don't know whether he's making the...
Yeah, I'll unmute Phil here and see.
Yeah, I'd be happy to give the report. Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
The Planning Commission met on October the 15th. Though we only had one agenda item, it was a rather substantial meeting. We did a conditional use plan review for the Sahaki and Rider Tracks. That was an application made by Prestige Property Partners, LLC. They were represented by their principal, Mr. James D'Angelo, his land planner and engineer, as well as his attorney. We reviewed the proposal for a subdivision under neighborhood lotting for the Sahaki and the Rider Tracks to be developed into a 42 home subdivision with one existing lot established as an estate lot on Big Road. So basically, the Rider Track, which fronts on Big Road, and the Sahaki Track, which fronts on Little Road, are being combined into one project area, totaling about 69 plus acres, under Article 6 of the zoning code, we are required to have a conditional use hearing for them. And the task for the Planning Commission was to review the township engineer's letter dated October, I believe, the 8th, and then Montgomery County Planning Commission review letter dated October the 15th, and to make recommendations to the Board of Supervisors, which will be used in the context of the conditional use hearing. The Planning Commission came up with 7 recommendations and also offered some comments about the discussions that took place at the meeting. These recommendations covered the consolidation of the property deeds into one, the setback issues concerning distances from the development to Little Road, as well as the neighboring two properties, a public trail easement, which we would like to have recorded on the rider track, of payment of a fee in lieu of for the absence of the playing field that is required under zoning, the evaluation of the existing trees and vegetation on the site. The engineers was being recommended to enter into conversations with PennDOT concerning traffic issues. And finally, we had a recommendation that stormwater basins and areas dedicated for stormwater retention be naturalized and integrated into the landscape. We also had comments based on discussions about the open space acquisition and preservation on the tract, as well as issues of the trails. So that was the extent of our conversations. It culminated in recommendations, which were then generated into a letter from our Planning Commission via the chairman to the Board of Supervisors as use and as testimony at the coming conditional use hearing. So that was the extent of our meeting. We were running about 2.5 hours long. Are there any questions?
Do we have any questions for Phil?
Phil, this is Dan. Just a real quick question. I believe that John Miklos from the county brought up the fact that it's appropriate for the developer to consider, I would call them stub roads to potential future developments. And he cited that as a potential concern related to the development, meaning there was no access. If, say, the Byram property came into being turned into development like 10 years or so way down the road, there was no stub road to get somebody out there. So,
yes, you're correct. That was a discussion point at the meeting. Yes.
Okay. Thanks, Phil.
Sorry that I missed that.
It's okay.
Phil?
Yes.
This is Chuck Geiser.
Sure.
Are there any other questions for Phil so we can move on to the next report? Phil, would you feel comfortable doing the comprehensive plan since you're the secretary to report for that, or am I asking too much?
I didn't pull my notes on that. I'm sorry.
That's all right. We did meet in October. We are still working on the plan with the hope that we can have some sort of public event in the early 2021. Public meaning probably virtual, but an event that is geared toward the public, and to have the plan in a form where it can be presented to the Board of Supervisors again in hopefully the first quarter of 2021. We are meeting, as I remember, I think we have a meeting this month on November 12th. We did vote at our last meeting to move our meeting time from 6:30 to 7 p.m. And that was done because the comp plan meeting was originally scheduled to be earlier than all of our other meetings in the township because we had a conflict originally with Planning Commission the same night. And we actually had a much earlier start time, but we don't have that anymore. And having the meeting at 6:30 was just creating logistical problems in, you know, schedules for Zoom meetings and other things. So I think there is no reason why we can't start at 7 like we do all of our other meetings. So the group voted on moving the meeting time from 6:30 to 7. And again, our next meeting date is November the 12th. That is a Thursday. That's it for that. Next would be our Park Rec Board. Pam, are you making the report tonight?
I will do that. Can everyone hear me?
Yep.
Good, thank you. And a big thank you to everyone who came out to the stream cleanup last Saturday. Special thanks to Josh Myers of the Park Board and Chuck Yeiser, neck brace and all, who were site leaders. We had small team sizes and the leaves made it more difficult to see the trash, but I think we still removed quite a bit of materials and it was a useful exercise. And we had a beautiful day for it. On October 24th, we had our rain garden planting event, as you've all heard, with under our grant with the PWC. We had about 25 volunteers who came out and we planted over 1,400 plants and also some hardwoods. Special thanks there to Mark and our Muni team, Warren Jacobs and Janet Leno for helping me with preparing the basins. There was quite a bit of work to be done. Carol gave us some good bones to work with, but there was a lot of preparation work that needed to be done before we could start planting. The deer fence has been purchased and the fence line and the post locations have been measured and marked out for the Muni team for installation. This will be a demonstration rain garden that we'll be using for training and instruction, a good thing to use for homeowners to see what a rain garden is. We formed a work team to begin developing the information to go on to the interpretive panel that will attend the garden and also information that will go in the QR code URL. Information such as the planting plan, the plant list, the how to do a rain garden, other information relevant to the important role that rain gardens can play with home for homeowners with containing stormwater or even their sump pump drainage and those kinds of things. And that'll be on the QR code. So we're started work on that. We reviewed briefly in the 2021 project list, one of our big projects we're going to start looking at is assessing Foy Park and identifying recommended modifications that might help to make the park more resilient as possible against flood damage and reducing maintenance costs to the township. I did speak briefly with the EAC during their last meeting last month. I think this is a good opportunity for the two of us to collaborate. There are recognizing that there are some aspects to this situation, the Foy situation, that we cannot control, such as the dam, that's beyond the scope of our volunteer committees. But we will be looking and focusing on the potential vegetative and topographical modifications that might be made, creating features to enhance the park's passive use, such as, you know, fishing, boating, picnicking. Replacement of the tot lot eventually with something more flood tolerant, those kinds of things. So we've started the discussion on that. Also started the discussion just looking at our planning now that we're done with all of our events and things. Hopefully next year we can do some events. But looking at our projects for next year, we're cautiously hopeful that we could have the resources to move ahead with things that are projected and identified on our draft 2021 budget, things as the QR code, tree donation program, the interpretive panels, more database development on plant tags and those kinds of things. And last but not least, we're still looking for some members, particularly anyone who's interested in educational outreach and developing educational information. We always have room for more. Thank you. Any questions?
Any questions for Pam?
No questions, but thanks again, you guys, for your great work on the rain gardens.
Oh, it's fun. Those are the fun things.
Congratulations. And for this rain garden, right, the Watershed Conservancy is going to help weed for the first year?
That's true. We have, we're going to cooperate, and we'll have combined weeding events. For next year, we'll do combined weeding events, so we'll keep it in good shape.
We'll have a weed alert when the event comes up so people can volunteer.
Oh, you bet.
Great. Thank you, Pam. Okay, that brings us to Environmental Advisory Council. Ruth, I saw her name. There's Ruth, Ruth Heil.
Hello, everybody.
Hello.
So the EAC met virtually on Monday, October 26th. First, concerning outreach, we were informed that the township administration now has a MailChimp email blasting account through which it intends to communicate with residents about township news on a regular basis. However, the first step is for recipients to sign themselves up to receive the messages, and Mark's working on that, and we'll notify the EAC when a process, like a link on the township website, is in place. A recording of the September on-lot septic system presentation has been posted to the EAC page at lowerfrederick.org. A thank you letter was mailed to the presenter, Roger Lehman of All County Associates, and it's the EAC's hope that anyone with an on-lot septic system take the time to view the informative presentation. So help us spread the word. The Tree Protection Working Group discussed possible minor corrections to Lower Frederick's landscape ordinance. A few points were noted by Carol Schuler as a means of tightening loose language, such as changing things like whenever reasonably possible, quote. The working group is also looking into past developers agreements, noting that they might need to be modified for the future. For instance, it may be necessary to state specifically what shall be allowed inside a tree protection zone. The group is continuing its research. The EAC tied up a loose end by voting in favor of adopting its bylaws. The draft, which was written last year, had never been officially moved forward. We now ask the supervisors to adopt them or request any necessary changes. The EAC moved to create another working group, this one to lead an inventory of the stormwater management basins and other infrastructure, stormwater infrastructure within the township. Gary, Warren, and Jackie will be working on this initiative, while Denise agreed to investigate the possibility of working with students at Ursinus to create a GIS map, one that can grow as additional resources are inventoried later. In new business, Pam visited us, as you just heard, to inform us of the challenges brought about by record flooding at Foy Park this summer. She wanted open communication, as she mentioned, knowing that it would be best if the two worked together to plan for flood-proof use of the park, and all are in favor of the partnership and appreciated her communication. The EAC briefly brainstormed about environmental aspects of commercial solar farms in response to a request for input into the potential creation of a related ordinance. Everyone agreed to look for case studies on best practices for plantings, buffers, erosion control, groundwater recharge, reflective glare mitigation, parcel size, etc. So we will be working on that. A sketch plan and conditional use application for the site known as Prestige was discussed. A review letter was drafted and sent to the supervisors. And in short, we simply concluded that without an environmental analysis and resource inventory, one cannot determine or make recommendations pursuant to the environmental benefits of neighborhood lotting and the open space which such action intends to preserve. In preparation for 2021, it was noted that Warren Jacobs and Denise Finney's terms will be expiring. The EAC will meet again on November 23rd, and there remains one vacant seat on the council. And that is my report.
Great. Thank you, Ruth. And again, congratulations and thank you to the EAC for your great work, as recognized by the recent award that we received from the Conservancy. And I think we're going to have to find a place to put that paddle, Mark, when we...
Yep, we will hang it in the lobby. It's very nice. It's
well, we certainly do appreciate the recognition. It remains to be said that the previous administration created the EAC, so that was step one. And step two, in my opinion, is the thoughtful consideration of this administration to the recommendations that the EAC are making. So, you know, it's certainly an award that goes to everyone.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Ruth?
I don't have a question, but I have a comment. Ruth, I happen to have an email exchange with a supervisor in West Goshen Township over another matter, and solar farm ordinances came up, and apparently they have one. So I will forward that to the EAC.
Thank you.
And thank you for reminding me of that, because I did get the information, but I'm sitting on it. So I'll get that over to you guys.
And just this is Dan, or just a thought. I didn't know whether our solicitor was familiar with other townships that might have solar farm ordinances in place that he might be able to direct our EAC to take a look at. So hopefully I didn't wait. Hopefully Colby heard that.
We can definitely look for that. I don't know of any on the top of my head, but we can look for that.
Absolutely. Okay. Okay, that'd be appreciated.
Although, Dan, it might be, no offense, Colby, but it might be more economical if maybe Mark or one of us does that.
Okay, that's fine, too. I'm sure Colby won't take offense.
I guess we would have to see how that fits within our ordinance framework, right? Whether that's a standalone or somehow finds its way into the overall scheme of things.
Yep.
And of course that we're really just chiming in on the environmental component of it. We're not taking the lead on suggesting an ordinance be adopted. Even we're just offering our thoughts on a vision for how these solar farms could become an asset and not a hindrance to protecting the environment.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I don't have enough experience to know what other aspects we need to be concerned with. I know years ago we did some work on ordinances of people who had solar panels on their house, and there were some safety concerns, you know, particularly for, let's say, people who have to go on the building if there's a fire, and so we had to make sure that there was enough clear room so somebody could get on the roof and get around the panels, right? Because those panels are on all the time. If it's during the day, you can't disconnect them. So there were some concerns there. I don't know whether that applies to a solar farm, but
yeah, Chuck, I think I'm responsible for this discussion. I watched a presentation. I think must have been last month. I was one of the. I think it may have been one of the. I don't remember who it was, but I can forward that to you if you like. But there are a number of specific issues related to solar farms, such as where do you put them, what do you do about the glare, right. Stormwater runoff issues, and so kind of the conclusion of this presentation was that both townships and developers prefer to have some boundaries rather than no boundaries. So that was why I brought it up with the EAC.
Okay.
And the EAC certainly appreciates having a voice in this, because unlike rooftop solar, these solar farms are very land consumptive, and that's where the greatest impact comes into play.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you, Ruth. Any other questions for Ruth before we move on to new business? Hearing none. Thank you again, Bruce. So, Mark, is there any new business?
Yeah, I had two things, but Ruth just stole my thunder.
Oh, okay.
the township's been working on putting together a listserv. I did brief the EAC on that at their last meeting. Hope to get so you're going to have to sign up to be part of the listserv. So I will put it on Facebook and we'll get it on the website. The sign up spot will be on the website and we can link it from Facebook. But that'll give us, begin to build a listserv of residents that want to get information. And then when we need to get information out to those residents, we'll be able to send them an email. You have to register yourself so that it's not considered spam or anything. So hope to have that on the website in the next week or two, so that people can start to register for that and then, start using that end of this year, next year, to get information out to the residents to try to be, try to do a good job advertising everything so that people know what's going on. The other item that we have is, I'm going to let the chief take, we got a, information from the district attorney's office of some stuff that they need for the police to do.
Thank you, Mark. I feel bad after all these budget things. I received some correspondence several weeks ago from the Montgomery County District Attorney's Office. And as I'm sure you are all aware, our district attorney, Kevin Steele, is very much engaged right now in trying to make sure that police departments and law enforcement in general in Montgomery County is being responsive, as well as displaying the best policies and practices for how we move forward with these issues with social justice and police reform. And one of the things that has really come to light is how police are conducting interviews with suspects and with witnesses, or people that maybe initially start out as witnesses that become suspects, and how this evidence is going to ultimately be presented eventually to a judge or a jury. And with the big push being that judges and juries these days really like to see video, which they consider to be independent, it's unmanipulated. And when I mean video recordings, audio recordings, as well as the video of police officers interacting with the public, or with suspects and witnesses, as well as hearing suspects and witnesses, their own words, how they would portray it, how they would explain certain situations. And with that, the district attorney's office provides to police departments what is called a prosecutorial manual. And this is a manual that has basically policies and procedures on how the DA's office feels are the best practices for moving forward with investigating and handling specific incidents and crimes. And with that, they have now come out with a strong recommendation. This is not a mandatory, but once again, because of the fact that I really feel an inherent responsibility to make sure that we are behaving and we are responding and we are conducting ourselves with the utmost level of professionalism, as well as also addressing these concerns in society. I feel that I need to bring it forward to the board tonight and ask the board to authorize that I be permitted to purchase a piece of equipment that is going to make all of this happen. And what I mean by that is that the district attorney's office now is saying that if we have situations in which suspects potentially could receive jail time, they want interviews conducted with those people to be audio and video recorded. And when this started out, because once again, we didn't have a whole lot of guidelines as to the specific equipment, I did some research. I spoke to several police departments. I spoke to vendors. I spoke to the DA's office. And ultimately, we came up with what we felt was the most affordable way to go. And it's actually now being recommended to departments that a piece of equipment called the Star Witness Field Interviewer. And basically what this is that it's a small camera. It's about the size of a cell phone, a little bit bigger, sets up, and it will record not only the person that is doing the interviewing, but the person being interviewed. And then it can be easily used for transcribing the interview, which is another requirement that they are saying that we have to have. Once again, this was not something that I planned in the last year when Mark and I did budget for the police department. We didn't know that we were going to be in this position fast forward a year later, but I do feel that we need to be responsive and responsible on how we move forward. The cost for this item is going to be $2,952. I have the money in my budget. We were lean this year with expenditures, as Mark has pointed out during his budget presentation. And ultimately, I think that this would be a worthy cause for us to move forward with and to spend the money now. Once again, coming up into compliance, and I have a feeling that down the road, while this may become mandatory eventually, but to be ahead of that curve and to keeping in mind social justice, police reform, compliance with the district attorney's office, it just makes sense all the way around. And the difficult thing that I found was we can't really traditionally use other methodology because of the transcription component of this. It has to be able to be transcribed. And the district attorney's office has said that if we don't have equipment that is capable of doing that, that when we submit our case files to them, it will be done and then we will be charged. We'll be back charged for that expense. That's not something that they will be passing on as part of the cost of prosecution to the defendant. So once again, to kind of circle back around, the piece of equipment is a portable unit. It's something that can be used out in the field, so an officer could take it with them if they were going to be conducting, say, an interview with somebody in their home, at another police station, at a hospital, or we could use it as kind of a permanently affixed item inside our interview room here at the police station. But once again, it is going to make this recording, which ultimately is tamper-proof, and will then be presented to not only the defense under discovery, but also to the district attorney's office as they start to prepare our cases for trial. The cost is $2,952. In conversing with Mark, I have the money available in the budget, and I'd like to submit it to the board tonight for consideration and approval.
Chief Maxey, just a quick question. Would you need just a single unit, or you think you need a backup unit as well? Because if it goes down, you'd be out of luck, right?
Well, you would be. I think that my suggestion would be, let's start with one. Maybe we can add one next year. I think that we looked at the amount of interviewing we're doing for these cases that would meet this requirement or right. require this, that we have this. And I think that with one, it would be sufficient. I talked to some other police departments that are actually larger than ours, and they're kind of doing the same thing. This okay. was unrolled recently, and a lot of people weren't prepared budgetarily. So I think that if we could try and start out with one and see how that goes, and maybe we could revisit this next year if we did need a second one. Obviously, we would make adjustments in the budget to acquire it. But I think that as of right now, I'm just asking for one, sir.
Okay, and just one follow-up question. I imagine these things have certain types of security features as opposed to like somebody trying to use their iPhone to record.
Correct.
Okay.
They do. It's specific technology that was designed for this in hand.
Okay.
It's tamper-proof, so somebody can't go in and alter or change. And really, this is what society is demanding and I'm supportive of. I mean, I will not condone, I will not permit practices where we are tricking, manipulating. That's not the purpose of policing. Policing is not an adversarial process, and it should not be. The truth is what the truth is. Most times you're going to find out very quickly in talking to somebody if they're going to be cooperative with the process. If they're not, they have a right to refuse that. But ultimately, when we do have a situation, especially as we get into some of the more sensitive investigations involving children, involving the alleged of sexual impropriety, things of that nature, it is very important to have people's words memorialized. And I think that this item, based on the research that I've done, is going to meet all those requirements and really comes with high recommendations from the DA's office itself.
Sounds like something that is definitely positive.
It is. Thank you.
Yeah.
Chief, is it, I guess it's sort of a ruggedized piece too, or?
I'm sorry, I didn't.
Is it sort of a ruggedized device that you?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's designed to be used in the field. So obviously, okay, Keeping that in mind, it's not going to be such a sensitive piece of equipment that we can't expose it to the elements, or we can't expose it to moving it around. It does come with a case for it to be protected and transported. And obviously, this is something that, because this is an evidentiary piece of equipment, it would be signed out. We would have some control over its movements, but it would be available to any of the officers that felt that they needed it or did need it. And I think that also a lot of times we're finding, what I like about this idea is, versus something that is permanently fixed in the building, sometimes people don't really want to come to the building to talk to us.
Right.
And they're much more comfortable in their own home, in a different setting or surrounding, or sometimes they're just there. They're at a hospital, they're at another police department, and it just makes us able to accommodate that situation without having to bring people back to our building.
Sure. Okay. Are there any other questions for Chief Maxey? So you're looking for a motion to purchase the Star Witness device?
I am, sir.
Yeah.
I am, sir.
I'll make the motion that we authorize the police department to purchase the Star Witness device as described by Chief Maxey.
I'll second it, Dan Orff.
Chuck Yizer made the motion, Dan Orff second. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of authorizing Chief Maxey to purchase the Star Witness device, say aye.
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 Any against? Great. Motion passes unanimously. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you very much. I really do appreciate the continued support from the board. This is wonderful, and I feel very good moving forward.
Thank you.
That's all the new business I had, Chuck.
That brings us to public comment.
I am not seeing anything.
Okay. So then we go to adjournment.
Motion, hey, Chuck, could I make one public comment?
Sorry.
I heard the EAC had a, they mentioned that they had an opening on the EAC, and I overheard somebody saying the other day that they didn't know how to get on any of these boards and committees. So I believe the process is they send a note into Mark or a quick
letter of intent?
Letter and a resume if they can.
Okay. Yeah. So at present, the only opening's a seat on the EAC. I don't think there's any other boards. There's two on the park board.
Two on the park board. Yeah.
Okay.
The full complement of the park board, I believe, is 9, and we have 7. Is that
correct?
I believe. Yeah. Okay.
Thanks, Mark.
Yep. No problem.
I will move to adjourn.
All in favor? Aye.
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 Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.